Senator from the fifth.
I would like to inquire the senator from the 24th.
Senator, we have to establish a quorum.
We already have one.
Quorum has been established. Senator from the fifth.
I'd like to inquire the senator from the. Thank you. I would like to inquire the senator from the 24th, Mr. President.
The senator from the 24th is in the chamber. Senator from the 24th district, you yield to an inquiry.
I do. Thank you, Mr. President.
She
Hello,
does proceed.
Senator, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
How's your day been so far?
My day's been interesting. I've been listening to you, and I appreciate all that's been going on to work on the problems on this piece of legislation and see what we can do.
It's a hot mess.
I know.
This bill is a hot mess. So I wanted to talk to you about, you know, your take and your opinion on this particular piece of legislation and just kind of get your overall views about the legislation.
Well, I'm glad you called me down here because I wanted to talk to you about something that you were just talking about. And I know it's your inquiry, but if you don't mind, we were talking about kids and school and kids, young kids changing masks, and you've got the purple one, and that's a pretty color, and let me try it on. You know, families back home and all around the state are trying to make decisions about whether to send their kids back to school, and superintendents are being put in the position of making those decisions. And you know what? Nobody ever envisioned this time. But that's what those superintendents, that is their job. And I think each school district has to make its own decisions. But as a government, we have an opportunity to provide them with information and resources to help them make good decisions about what they're going to put into place for the kids who do come back to school and for the teachers and the bus drivers and the counselors who need to be there. And we're not doing that as a state. And we need to be providing insight, input. We need to talk to people in all kinds of fields, not just in the education field. My educators are great at what they do in all the school districts that I represent. They work hard. They're there for the kids. They're there for the teachers. They're there for the families. But they don't know how this virus gets sent around any better than anybody else. They may not know how their air filtration system works, going from room to room, and how that might impact the spread of the virus. They need some input from people that the government has the power and ability to gather together, which is why I filed that piece of legislation, the Smart and Safe Schools Act, which also says what happens if you're a teacher teaching in the schools and you're exposed to COVID-19 and you need to stay home for 14 days because you've been exposed and you can't go back and potentially bring that exposure back to the classroom and back to kids and their families and to the other people in the building. Well, let's make sure that we use some of those federal dollars to allow those teachers to be paid, so that they can afford to do the right thing and stay home, to not have to use up their vacation time or their sick days. This is part of their job, part of the hazard of going back in an environment like this.
So will they have to use their sick days?
I don't think we know.
If they were to get ill?
Certainly, that's part of what my bill addresses, because I don't know that it's being addressed in any other way.
Have you spoken with DESE or to any...
I think DESE is finally starting to look into some of these things and do a little bit, but we haven't provided the authority or the input for those kinds of important pieces that have to be done. What about the kids in our districts who are on free and reduced lunch, whose parents decide it's not safe for them to go back into school? Are they going to get fed? The bill that I put forward says, yes, they need to be provided these lunch meals that they depend upon, even if they're not physically back in person.
And, Senator, I really respect the fact that, you are thinking about, those things.
This is the top issue
on
the minds.
That's the most critical and crucial issue of the day.
I think so, too.
Dealing with this pandemic that is rapidly spreading across our country and the world.
Certainly across our state.
And to be able to have mechanisms put in place like what you're talking about is forward thinking. And I believe that if you haven't already spoken with the governor, or if you haven't already talked to DESE, that you should do so.
Yeah, I will tell you that, I am hopeful that the governor has seen the legislation that has been filed. This special session, I would have thought that the governor would have called a special session to deal with how our schools reopen, and that we as a state and that the department and the governor's office would have already anticipated that we were going to get here. And you know what? If COVID had ended before school started, wouldn't that have been great? And it would have all been for naught. But it wasn't, and it isn't. And a special session is generally for extraordinary circumstances. The opening of schools during a pandemic, I can't think of anything that would affect more people than that. And getting that under control and getting this virus under control is something that we absolutely need to be on top of. This group that I asked to have convened to talk about these things would also provide indicators or markers for what happens if your school does have an outbreak. Where do we go from there? What's the transition period? How do we train teachers to teach in this new way? They've had to do some of it during the last school year, but it hasn't been an easy transition. Ask any teacher or any parent. And I talk to them every single day. So this would have been the opportune time, and I believe there's still time, for the government to step in and say, let us do something so that when the superintendents from a rural community, an urban community, a suburban community make those decisions, they're making them based on data and science and research so that they can open in as safe a way as possible in whatever way they decide to open. So, that was a disappointment to me that this legislative session wasn't dealing with the big topic on so many people's minds.
Yeah, and so tell me this here. So did you offer an amendment or did you have something that you wanted?
I have a bill that I filed. It doesn't fall into the call. So I haven't offered it on this piece of legislation. But the governor clearly knows it's out there. Our colleagues in the chamber clearly know that this bill is out there. I would like to say it falls into the call because it is absolutely relating to public safety. It is probably one of the biggest issues because even with the number of deaths by homicide and suicide in the state of Missouri, even though those numbers are high, this opening of schools, if schools aren't prepared well.
So how many deaths do we have right now in the state of Missouri to homicide and suicide versus how many we have to COVID?
You know what? I don't have those numbers, but I bet somebody else does. But I will tell you, before the statistics we have for suicide and homicide, I think the latest ones we have for both are from 2018. And they say there was a time in 2018, at least, where the number of suicides was double the number of homicides. So people having access to guns, because guns are almost always fatal when it comes to suicide, people having easy access to guns makes taking one's life, unfortunately, so much easier and so much more, in a sense, spontaneous, because something happens in the moment, and that's when a person, if they have access to a firearm, finds an easy way to take his or her own life. And we want to get in the way of that, if we can. We want to help people find their way back to valuing their own life and feeling like they can overcome that temporary severe depression and that temporary feeling of being lost with no other alternative. So when there is not a gun present in yes. those people's hands, that helps us save their lives and help them get the help we need.
Where is everyone?
I don't know. Where's the quorum queen?
I just look around here. They don't know.
I know how to close down a chamber, don't I?
Yeah, they really didn't want to hear you. Everybody just left.
I think they went to tune me in their offices. Don't you think so?
I guess they want to have dinner or something.
Remind me to show you my, you'll love this because you're the queen bee of quorum calls, and I have a little bee on my sleeve today.
Well, I'm going to say this here. I want to just get back to let them get a little comfortable before I call a quorum.
All right. Well, let me just tell you one more thing I think about. So here we are working with violent crime, and I'm suggesting that we also need to be working on making sure our schools open safely in whatever way they choose to open. And I think that what we know is, you know, that real leaders can do both. There are two issues in front of us: crime and violence and public safety, and going back and opening our schools during a pandemic and public safety. Real leadership would show me that we can be doing both of these things at the same time. That's what I was hoping and expecting to see, and that's not what we're seeing. But that's what leadership is about. It's working on more than one problem that is coming before us at once. So yes, we need to get violent crime under control. Whether this is the best way, we'll see what we end up with. I know that this is in the stages of negotiation.
I don't think we should have unlawful use of a weapon in this bill.
Okay.
I mean, you're talking about minor cases where young kids can be certified as adults.
Right. You know, I used to teach 11 and 12-year-olds. And I will tell you that, I would not suggest that their brains are fully developed.
No, and sometimes, you know,
but
you just have to find that, you know, that middle course. And I just don't think that certifying children as adults for armed criminal action just because they have a weapon on them that they probably never used, probably won't use, probably a minor affair. Children right now can have guns at 16. So if you don't want kids to have guns, then don't allow for them to have a gun at 16 years old. Because they now can have guns at 16 years old. And so what is this?
So it's interesting. I think the idea of 12-year-olds being held accountable as an adult goes against everything I can imagine. However, under current law, my understanding is, should a prosecutor believe...
Hold on. So I think this is like the worst political move ever in life. Now, we are talking about removing Kim Gardner from office. This is what was just dropped by Onder. And I'm sorry, gavel me, because I can be gaveled about this. But this is horrible. Point of order, Senator Nishida.
You mean the senator from the second?
Point of order. Senator from the fifth is calling names. Senators first by their first name. So anyway.
Yeah, I see that.
So didn't they just see? I mean, didn't they really just see what just happened in the St. Louis area when they try to come after Representative? The circuit attorney.
Attorney Kim Gardner.
When they try to come after Kim Gardner in the city of St. Louis, she won with over close to 70% of the vote. And if they think that this here won't rally the base, if they think that this won't rally the base, they have another thing coming. This here will rally the base throughout this state if they drop this and shove this down our throats. Do you know that? You understand that?
Here it is.
Here it is. So this here, because hold on. How well did you do?
I'm sorry.
How well did you do in the district that you're running in?
Well, you know what? When you run unopposed in a primary, you usually do pretty well.
Yeah, I totally agree. But how many votes did you get?
102,000.
Okay, and what congressional district is that?
Second congressional district.
And your opponent, did she have an opponent?
She did not.
How much did she get?
Approximately 63,000. Not that I'm counting.
Now, hold on. I'm just saying, you got, without an opponent, you had 100 and some thousand, and then the current
incumbent, right?
Incumbent got 60 some thousand. And that's a current incumbent?
Right.
And then these individuals don't understand that the base is riled up. They are sick and tired of being sick and tired. And that if this happens here, it's going to only increase the number of turnout numbers in November. So if that's what they want to do, let's let Andra offer his bill. Amendment. I'm done talking. Where's Representative May? I'm sorry.
Senator from the fifth, we should refrain from using senators' names while on the floor, but you currently have the floor. So how can the chair help you tonight?
I'm sorry, Mr. President. I'd like to inquire the senator from the fourth. She needs to come take this floor for a second.
Senator from the fourth does not appear to be in the chamber.
Oh, that's fine. All right, well, let me inquire the senator from the second with this amendment.
Senator from the second does not appear to be in the chamber. The sergeant of arms will summon the senator from the second. Senator from the 2nd District, do you yield to an inquiry from your colleague of the 5th?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 5th.
Notice the absence of a quorum.
Sergeant of Arms, please summon the Missouri Senate. An absence of quorum has been noted. Quorum has been established, Senator from the 5th. You may proceed with your inquiry.
Yeah, I would like to inquire the Senator from the 2nd.
Senator from the 2nd, do you yield to an inquiry?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Hey, Senator, how are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Having fun yet?
Well, yeah, now it's getting fun.
What did you order for food today?
We ordered from Echo Lounge.
The who?
Echo Lounge.
What did you order?
I ordered, I don't know, some kind of sandwich. Catfish, I think.
Catfish sandwich. You like catfish?
I love catfish.
What? Do you like pasta?
What?
Do you like pasta?
Pasta?
Yeah. Like, you know, like fettuccine noodles.
I like pasta, yeah.
What's your favorite food?
Favorite food? Oh, I don't know. I have lots of favorites.
Oh, yeah. But I see the circuit attorney is not your favorite person.
Well, no, because...
You say no?
No, she is not my favorite person because there is a crime epidemic in this state, in the city of St. Louis, in Kansas City, in Springfield. The state of Missouri has the number 3 murder rate in the country. And it seems that there are certain elected prosecutors in this state who are not committed to their mission of protecting the public. And I think certainly the circuit attorney in the city of St. Louis is one of those people.
And you're basing that on what? You're basing that on the... I mean, how could she...
I'm basing it on the fact that there are fewer prosecutions than ever, that she has blackballed a record number of police officers that she won't handle their cases, and that a record of 65 attorneys have left her office since she came in office. The Post-Dispatch editorialized that a total of 470 prosecutor years of experience have exited the circuit attorney's office since she was... elected.
And that's her fault?
Yeah, it's her fault.
I don't know. How is that her fault?
Have you talked to any of those prosecutors who have left the office?
So, no, I'm going to ask you a question. Have you talked to some of those prosecutors? Have you talked to the ones that stay? Have you talked to Kim Gardner about why they left?
I talked to Kim this session.
No, did you talk to them about why they left?
Yes, she said they were all making $100,000 a year, which I know isn't true. We talked it in your office. Remember?
Well, she's not going to lie. However.
No, I mean, there's no way they're all making $100,000. That's what she said in your office.
No. She said that they can get paid higher wages, and that's why they're leaving, because they're looking for higher wages.
Yeah, she used the figure $100,000, and I'll tell you, I know a lot of young people leaving law school. They're not all making $100,000.
How many? I said a lot of them are leaving because they don't like her. For some reason.
I think they are leaving because she doesn't seem committed to the mission of protecting the public, which they are dedicating their careers and that they swore to uphold.
Well, if that's the case, how did she get 70% of the vote in the city of St. Louis? I mean, if the people...
I don't know, Senator.
But I'm saying if the people are so dissatisfied with Attorney Kim Gardner, why did she get overwhelming support in the city that she represents? You know why?
Bye, Senator.
Because she is cracking down on crooked cops. Crooked cops that free case individuals. On cops that bring charges without no concrete evidence and expect her to charge anyway. Because the people that's on that list have been accused of so many illegal activities while under oath.
So why are the prosecutors leaving, Senator?
Why are the prosecutors leaving?
You're telling me why the police officers are dissatisfied. Why are the prosecutors leaving?
Because they can't handle the pressure.
What pressure?
If
they're not bringing cases, they're not under any pressure at all. They have it easy.
What you mean? Who says she's not bringing cases?
Well, they're not bringing
cases. She's bringing cases?
She has a record low of bringing murder charges to trial.
But the question is, why is that? Because the evidence is not strong enough on some cases.
How about the evidence?
So you just want her to just go lock someone up?
The evidence in the looting and the riots and the arson, a lot of those people are caught on camera, and she didn't bring charges against any of the rioters.
The police, the police released them. And so she didn't bring charges because the police had already released these people. And at the end of the day, those were like, what, charges? How does she know that particular person did it? I mean, they was grabbing up a lot of different people. They were grabbing up everybody at the time.
Senator, they weren't just randomly grabbing people. They were witnessing crimes, and they were arresting the people committing crimes. Not a single charge was brought against a single one of those folks. And just because they're released from the jail, from the workhouse, doesn't mean they can't be charged. People get released and rearrested and charged all the time.
I don't think that this is what this is about. I think what the status quo, what they are angry about and what they are afraid of is what we're seeing happening in the city of St. Louis, and that's pure reform. Reforming the criminal justice system in a way that we have never seen before.
Senator,
instead of locking them up and wanting to throw away the key, there's many times where she decided, no, we're going to do diversion programs. And her diversion program is working effectively.
Sure, but what about the cases she does bring to trial, Senator?
Hold up. And Kim, if you're listening, send Jason the information on how many cases you prosecuted since you've been there. Text her. However, but let me just say this to you.
What about the cases she does prosecute? What's her conviction rate?
Well, we're going to ask her that, too.
Yeah, her conviction rate's 20%.
It's 20%.
The previous prosecutor was 80%. I'm just saying she's utterly incompetent,
that
Senator.
That doesn't have nothing to do with incompetency. That has something to do with being able to reform and to understand and to know that locking a person up and throwing away the key is not going to transform the crime that exists in neighborhoods.
No, a conviction rate is the percentage of cases she chose, she handpicked and brought to trial. How many did she win?
She's not taking them to trial. Maybe it was the people that left that took it to trial. And maybe they left and they got mad because they couldn't bring a conviction. All the prosecutors you're talking about, maybe it was them.
Well,
that wasn't able to bring it.
Same prosecutors had an 80% conviction rate under their previous boss. The problem.
Or Senator from Clay.
Thank you, Mr. President. To raise a point of order.
State your point of order.
This amendment goes beyond the scope of the governor's call.
Senator, the amendment has been distributed but has not been offered.
Apologies, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Senator from the 5th and Senator from the 2nd, please proceed.
That it goes beyond the scope. Okay, but thank you very much, Senator. So, again, if people are so dissatisfied in the city of St. Louis, and it seems like it's a lot of white males who are coming after prosecuting attorney because how dare she go after the highest powerful man in the state, the governor Greitens at the time.
That's, I don't think it has anything to do with
how
that.
How dare she go after law enforcement? That has never happened before either.
I don't think it has anything to do with that.
That's what this is about. That's what it's about.
I think it has to do with the fact that black males and black females, even children as young as 4 years old, are dying in the streets of the city of St. Louis.
When have you guys ever cared?
In their own homes.
When have you ever cared?
We have a prosecutor who is willfully...
When have you ever cared?
Willfully negligent, willfully neglectful in performing her duty and upholding her oath of office.
Says the people that elected her? So over 60% of the people says she's doing a fantastic job.
There are a lot of things into who people vote for,
no.
Senator, but... Those who worked closest with her, the prosecutors who worked with her on cases, they voted with their feet and left in a mass exodus.
And
the Fraternal Order of Police believes she is terribly neglectful in her
duty.
Why?
Because she won't accept criminals who do bad things to be able to get individuals arrested and locked up for 30 to 40 years. Because she knows that those individuals that's on that list have some discrepancies in how they police in the communities, and then she say, no, I'm not going to deal with that. I'm not going to take those cases.
You believe they are all criminals. You believe all those folks on Gardner's list are criminals?
I believe that they have had some type of misconduct that will not stand up in court where they will be reliable witnesses. Okay? That's what I believe. I believe that.
Do you dispute that right now there is a shortage of something on the order of 140, 160 police officers in the city of St. Louis? Do you dispute that the city of St. Louis Police Department is having trouble finding an adequate number of officers?
No, I don't believe that. I believe that
you don't believe they're understaffed?
They are understaffed, but for 100...
It is.
How many people do they fire every year?
I don't know the fire rate.
Well, tell them to send you how many people they actually get rid of every single year.
I know they have lots of job openings. I'm sure there are firings every year.
Ask them how many.
I don't know that number. Do you?
Well, I'm not going to do your research for you, but you should know that. You should know if those individuals have actually, was it 140 people that actually left versus 140 people that they need now?
No, it's my understanding those are attritions, not firings or layoffs. Those are attritions. In other words, people are leaving.
You say what?
They are people who are leaving. It's attrition. People are either leaving or retiring. It's not firings.
Okay, and so you're saying they're not being fired?
Yeah, that's over 100.
They're just leaving.
Yeah, maybe a few are absences because of firings, but most are leaving the department.
Okay.
And I'm asking you why you think that is. Because I've talked to some of these officers.
They leaving because
the morale is very low.
You know why they leaving?
Why is that, Senator?
They leaving because they don't believe that the city of St. Louis have a great educational system that their children can go to, their great grandchildren or their children's children can go to. That because of the educational system and the lack of pay, they're leaving. And it's not that many of them are actually leaving.
I agree with you. I think the quality of the education system in the city of St. Louis is a big part of the reason many of those officers are leaving. But I think
there's also a
problem with morale.
But let me say this here. And you talked about the representative. I mean, you're talking about Attorney Gardner having this secret list, this list.
Not a secret list. I think the officers know who they are are on it.
But this is the same list that they've had before in the past under current circuit attorneys.
Well, Jennifer Joyce had a certain number of officers. She was looking closely at their cases, but it wasn't the magnitude of what.
Why is it that the prior circuit attorney can have a list? And no one go up in arms. And I like Jennifer Joyce, okay? But why can the prior circuit attorney have the same list as the current circuit attorney and not get as much, and not get any pushback? No pushback. We didn't hear of anybody speaking out against the former circuit attorney when she had the same type of list that the present a circuit attorney is holding on to. I mean, why is this a double jeopardy type thing?
I think the answer is that the previous circuit attorney was competent and was committed to doing her job.
Hold on, because so you don't,
and I believe this circuit attorney is not competent and is not committed to doing her job.
You're gonna quit being disrespectful to because we can say the same thing about you. You're not competent with doing your job because you can't even get a bill passed. Okay,
if you want to talk about
incompetency, okay,
Go to my office and we'll look at my wall. Some bills passed.
We can look at your legislation. She have convicted some people too. So based on
20%,
and you probably got 10% legislation passed.
I'd say prosecutors in my county convict about 90-95% of their cases.
Okay.
Her predecessor convicted 80% of their cases.
Okay,
and she's 20.
Okay, and...
And if your prosecutors all leave, you'll...
And this is for the record. This is for the record. A prosecuting attorney, Kim Gardner, a 97 conviction rate confirmed by police and the court data. So go check your record. Okay, this is confirmed by police and the court data. And I'm saying quit with all of this lying and false accusations simply because you don't like the fact that she brought down the one of the powerfulest men at that time, which was your friend.
Do we want to talk about Mr. Tisby and his federal indictments, Senator?
No. Why'd she hire Mr. Tisby?
You brought up the Greitens investigation. Let's talk about Mr. Tisby.
Mr. President.
Senator?
Point of order.
Senator from the 5th.
Tell him to quit inquiring of me because this is my inquiry. I'm inquiring of him.
Senators,
let's
maintain a spirit of decorum. You may proceed with your inquiry.
Okay.
Senator, you made an assertion and I was replying to your assertion.
No, let me just say this, Senator. Because, I mean, I get a little heated when you start trying to attack a reformer. I get a little heated when you start trying to attack a reformer, a person that is doing her job, doing it effectively, and you cannot keep sitting here standing here talking about she's incompetent. We can say the same thing about you because you don't have no 20% of legislative bill passing under your belt.
You know, it's.
I mean, how many bills did you pass last year?
This 2020 session?
How many bills did you pass this year?
Well, probably a dozen.
What bills did you pass?
There was a bill pertaining to edibles. There was a bill. There were several bills pertaining to crime and public safety.
And I let you pass those bills. Let you pass those bills.
So, Senator, you're asserting that Republicans are upset at Ms. Gardner because of the Greitens investigation. But I'll have you know that I remember the day that Mr. Tisby came to this Capitol building snooping around. Mm-hmm. I asked to see his badge. I assumed he was a police detective, but he wasn't that. It turned out the city of St. Louis Police Department refused to participate in that investigation. So she had to hire this disreputable gun for hire, Mr. Tisby, in order to do her investigation for her. Ultimately, that same Mr. Tisby is now the subject of, I believe, 5 federal indictments for misconduct and perjury. So you're the one who brought up the Greitens investigation, not me. I believe
fine.
The Greitens investigation reflects very poorly on Ms. Gardner. But it's not the reason. I am concerned about the blood in the streets. Many of whom are your constituents.
The blood in the streets.
And if we cannot get a handle on this crime problem in the city of St. Louis.
The blood in the streets is a direct correlation to you all being soft on guns. Okay? That's why the blood is in the streets.
So we should get tougher on gun crime, Senator, right?
No, because you allow individuals to have easy access to guns, 15-year-old kids, 12-year-old kids, easy access to guns without no restrictions whatsoever as to who can carry a gun, and with the exception of criminals.
Our concealed carry laws, Senator, are 18. Our concealed carry laws all say 18, Senator.
I think...
Can you name a single crime in the state of Missouri that's been committed by a concealed carry permit holder?
We don't have concealed carry, so that's irrelevant. That's irrelevant. We don't even have concealed carry. Okay? But there's no concealed carry, and that's the problem that we have.
You can still get a concealed carry permit.
But
I have one in my wallet right now.
You don't need it. Do you need a concealed carry to carry a gun?
You don't need it in most locations, but it does confer some privileges that you don't have under our constitutional carry statute. But in terms of guns, we passed in 2005. The legislature passed concealed carry with permits.
I have a question.
Can you name a single crime committed by a lawful concealed carry holder?
I'm inquiring of you. You don't ask me questions, okay? All right, I'm inquiring of you, all right? So let me tell you this here. If you can have your people to go to the police and they can confirm it, and go to the court data where it can be confirmed that 97% conviction rate comes out of Attorney Gardner's office, would you then apologize and then take back that incompetency? Because that's what you need to
competent.
Do.
Anyone who can't keep her office staffed is incompetent, too. I mean, if I had most of my medical assistants and nurses leaving me tomorrow, that would make me at very least an incompetent manager. But no, her conviction rate is 97%. I have it from a good source, and I've asked him for the actual documents documenting
So you don't think that race may have something to do with them leaving?
I'm sorry?
You don't think that race may have something to do with them leaving? Race. Racism.
Have something to do with what?
Those individuals not wanting to work up under Kim Gardner.
Well, no. African-American cops have left the department, too. And there are some African-American prosecutors who have left under Kim Gardner, too. I think it's cops and prosecutors who are committed to enforcing the law and protecting public safety who are discouraged by Kim Gardner.
I just think about the negative news, and they don't want to be associated with Kim because of the negative false allegations and news reporting that has been centered around the prosecuting attorney. Again, if the prosecuting attorney was so incompetent, and what you're saying is that everybody in the St. Louis area is incompetent, because everybody in the St. Louis area with over 60% of the vote voted for her. So are you saying that we have doctors, we have lawyers, we have teachers, we have engineers, we have developers, we have all kind of people that live in the St. Louis area that decided that they wanted her to have a second term? Are you calling all of those people incompetent too?
There are lots of different reasons people vote.
So now, why do they vote for
her? Here we have an article from KMOV St. Louis entitled "Records Show Trial Conviction Rate for Circuit Attorney's Office Has Fallen Nearly 20% in 2 years," and I'll get into here as far as the actual.
Okay, but why? Why? What did they say? Why?
Prosecutors are all.
No. That's not good enough for me. I don't want to hear what you think it is. I want to hear why they say it was. Why did they say?
So the prosecutors that I've talked to
No.
They say Kim Gardner has no desire to enforce the criminal law.
Listen, you just read an article.
You and I have talked about
You're totally out of order. And I'm gonna have you gaveled in a minute, okay? Because I'm telling you, I'm inquiring of you. Okay, now you keep it up. I'm gonna have you gaveled.
Okay.
Okay. And so, again, what article did you just read, Senator, from the second?
It's an article from KMOV St. Louis.
And what did they say, Senator?
It talked about records show that the trial conviction rate for the circuit attorney's office has fallen.
Okay, let's say it has fallen. What's the reason?
Well, the exodus of 65 prosecutors from her office might have something to do with it.
Is that what it said?
Let's see.
You keep inflicting your own what you think it is. I'm not trying to hear about what you think it is or a hypothetical.
Believe me.
What are the facts?
Believe me. If I lost my entire medical office staff, I would be far less productive too. But I think it would reflect on me as a boss and as a physician if my entire staff left my office. That 65 figure is more prosecutors than were employed by the circuit attorney's office when Kim Gardner was sworn in.
But do you know that? Do you know that when you have a new person to come in, okay, anywhere, that the turnover rate is going to be high? I mean, because they have new leadership. And the people that have been there for years are still, they still have an allegiance to the old leadership. Okay, and so when new leadership comes in and they don't like the way that new leadership rolls and it's different from the old status quo leadership, you're going to have a high turnover. You're going to have a high turnover in any department, in any place of business. Okay, so don't quit making it seem like, whoa, this is a big thing, this turnover is so high. Okay? You have a turnover when you change the leadership, period. Look at the conservative caucus. When y'all lost, y'all wanted to flee, but y'all couldn't go nowhere. The turnover would have been high. If you would have left the caucus, the Republican caucus, it would have been less people within the Republican caucus because you didn't get your way when you ran for office within the party. You didn't get your way, and then you started your own little caucus, the conservative caucus. But you weren't able to leave, so you stayed, and you just was a disruptive person. And so the same thing happened in other places. When you have leadership that you don't agree with or new leadership that's coming in and you don't see it there the way that they see it, It's the same thing. You went and got a whole conservative caucus against your own body because you didn't agree with the type of leadership that had just came into power. And I'm saying that there are turnovers. So quit making it seem like because she's incompetent, that's why people are leaving.
Senator, do you know who Kennedy Powell is?
Who?
Kennedy Powell. How about Xavier Usaga? How about Journey Thompson? How about Santonio Cox? How about Clifford Brown? How about Anton Swan or Eddie Hill? Those are respectively a three-year-old, a seven-year-old, an eight-year-old, a 15-year-old, a 13-year-old, a 15-year-old, a 10-year-old killed just this year in the city of St. Louis.
So did Kemp kill him?
Do we not have a crime problem?
Did Kemp kill him?
I know you think we have a racist cop problem.
Did Kemp pick up a gun?
Crime problem, Senator.
So listen, so it's Kemp's fault, okay, and not your fault, because you have allowed all type of guns in the inner cities based on the weak policies, the soft policies, where anybody can have access to guns. Who are you blaming? You should be blaming yourself.
Senator.
Not Kim.
Senator, there were guns in the city of St. Louis 5 years ago. There are guns today. Something has changed. Gun crime, all crime, has skyrocketed.
Well, that's
skyrocketed. Ms. Gardner is charging the brutal crime of carjacking as stealing.
Stolen
a pack of gum or a...
Senator, I'm going to make sure you're going
to... I'm just going to ask, do we have a crime problem in the city of St. Louis or not? Or is it all racist cop problem?
Mr. President.
Senator from the 5th.
No, I'm serious. He's out of order. Okay, I'm inquiring of him, and according to the rules, when I'm inquiring of him, he don't inquire me unless I let him, and I'm not letting him this time.
Senator,
so,
you may end your inquiry at any time, but in the middle of an inquiry, it is at least friendly to let each other inquire of each other.
Well, he can't keep talking over me, so I'm a point of order.
You may continue your inquiry, or you're welcome to inquire of somebody else, Senator.
No, we're going to keep this conversation going here. Thank you.
You guys are going to let me know when dinner is here.
Yeah. So anyway,
Senator from the 5th.
Yeah.
Once again, we will remind you that it is against Senate rules to use the senator's name. Please refer to them by their district number or county they represent.
So anyway, Senator, I know the names of those children. And it saddens me to have so many young children die at the hands of guns. But I think that for you to say it's the circuit attorney's fault that the kids are dying, it's
one problem.
It's appalling.
One problem.
I think it's appalling. If you want to start, you know, calling out names, you know Eric Gardner?
Who?
Eric Gardner.
Eric?
Gardner.
Gardner.
Yeah.
Is that another crime victim in the city of St. Louis?
Do you know John Crawford III? You know John Crawford?
Another crime victim in the city of St. Louis.
Do you know Michael Brown?
I think we all know Michael Brown.
Do you know Ezell Ford?
Ezell Ford.
Ezell Ford.
I assume another crime victim in the city of St. Louis.
Do you know Freddie Gray?
I know Freddie Gray, of course.
Do you know Joseph?
Joseph?
Maine. Do you know Patterson Brown? Alonzo Smith, do you know him?
No.
Jamar Clark.
Are these police-involved shootings, Senator?
Well, why did you say that there's another crime victim? These are all individuals that was killed, and I could have went on and on and on, by law enforcement.
So okay. were they? Hold on, are you contending they were all killed unjustly by law enforcement? That every one of these was a cold-blooded murder, as clearly the George Floyd case was? Is that what you're saying?
How did George Floyd?
Because Attorney General Eric Holder and now Wesley Bell did not find Darren Wilson to have acted improperly. They found Darren Wilson to have acted in self-defense in the course of his duty as a law enforcement officer. Michael Brown.
No, that's not the case. He basically said that he didn't have strong evidence to convict. Based on the statutes.
Right. Wesley Bell said that, Eric Holder said that, and Bob McCullough said that. So why did you include Michael Brown in your list?
Because that case should be opened back up. Because you heard you heard it earlier where the prosecutor at the time gave the wrong information to the jurors. That the information that should have been read to the jurors was the Tennessee versus Gardner, and that didn't happen.
Right.
So he gave them the wrong instructions.
But Eric Holder looked at the case, and Wesley Bell looked at the case, and didn't change their handling of the case. They did not bring charges either.
Let me say this here, Senator. All I'm saying to you is that you're going to have to put a little respect on the Gardner's name. And you cannot continue to be disrespectful. You know, she's always been nice to you. Every time she's pleasant when she's talking to you. But you have to be able to try to defame her character by saying that she's incompetent when that's further from the truth.
Well, saying she's
and then you're gonna turn around.
Saying she's incompetent is not the same as defaming her character. Now,
what?
I think her hiring the 5-time indicted felon, Mr. Tisby, that might reflect on her character and on her prosecutorial ethics. I think the blatantly political prosecution of the McCloskey family reflects on her ethics and her character.
All right, let's talk about that.
Incompetence is a different issue.
Hold on. So, you know, you just I don't know what to say about you. But at any rate, those individuals you just named, I have a question. Is it illegal to point a gun at someone? I'm asking you a question.
Not if you fear for your safety, which I don't. I think
so.
Excuse me.
So how did?
Ask you? Is it illegal to burn down a building? Is it illegal to kill an off-duty police officer, Senator?
Is it illegal for police to be able to put their feet on individuals' necks and kill them?
Of course not.
Right.
George Floyd was murdered.
And do they ever go to jail?
I'm sorry.
Do they ever go? The amount of law enforcement deaths in the city of St. Louis and throughout this country, they always get off.
And it's clearly
blatant that they committed a crime. Okay, that was excessive force in many cases.
It certainly wasn't clear in the Darren Wilson case.
But let me say this here. He was unarmed.
Okay.
He was unarmed. What could he have done?
Charged him, and he was larger than Officer
Wilson. How you know he charged him? Based on what? You didn't see no camera. Based on what Darren said?
He charged him.
You don't know that for real?
Forensic evidence.
You don't even know that. That's hearsay. And it shouldn't have been upheld in court.
So you disagree with Eric Holder and Wesley Bell?
I absolutely do.
Okay, that's your right.
Now let me say this here.
That's your right. But to say, aren't people innocent
until
proven
guilty? And they need to reopen the case. But let me
say, aren't people innocent until proven guilty? It seems to me your approach is that in every officer involved shooting, the officer is guilty.
Let's go back to your friends in Central West End. So you have peaceful protesters walking down the street.
They just broke through a gate. They just committed breaking and entering.
Okay, Well, give them
property.
Okay, well, give them an ordinance.
And some of them were armed, you know, Senator. Some of them had firearms, too.
Hold up.
Does that not matter?
You gave them the authority to have a firearms.
No, I mean,
now you're going to try to use it against them? Yeah, you gave the protesters the authority to have open carry.
Right.
So now you're going to try to use it against them?
Well, yeah, when they're threatening the lives of the McCloskey family, when they're saying, we're going to kill you, we're going to kill your dog, we're going to burn down your house.
You know what?
I'd feel threatened.
Your rhetoric is off the chain tonight. Now, let me ask you a question. Because we're
In the papers, it's in the media outlets, Senator.
So tell me this here.
Protesters, these so-called peaceful protesters, threatened the McCloskeys' lives. They threatened to kill their
dog. Did you see the video?
They threatened to burn down the house.
So you're just going by what he said. You're just going, because what I saw in the video, I saw them walking past his house. Okay, now the video don't lie. I saw people actually asking people to keep going. When they was out there with their hands, with their things pointed, they was on the sidewalk, walking past, not even going to, they was going to someone else's house. But just like so many other, they fear for their life, and they want to start shooting or pointing guns at black people because they fear for their lives.
I believe they
and there
did
was no reason.
Yeah.
There was no reason for you to point guns, because it's illegal to point guns at individuals. Okay, so you have to have more than just somebody walking down the street and I'm a pointing gun because I fear for my life. You have to have more than that. A person exercising their First Amendment rights, so I'm finna pull out my Second Amendment right.
So,
I mean, come on, you have to do better than that.
So, Senator, if someone who has a gun told you they were going to kill you, would you not fear?
You believe anything you hear. That's really bad. I mean...
I'm sorry?
Who told you that?
It's in a number of media accounts.
And who stated that?
Witnesses at the scene.
Which witnesses at the scene stated it?
I don't know. I didn't take their statement.
No.
But, you know, if your favorite prosecutor weren't so busy prosecuting this middle-aged couple defending their homes, their lives, and their property, and more busy enforcing laws against murder and arson and rape and rioting, maybe we'd have a little fewer problems like this.
And if there wasn't so many police-involved shootings and so much injustice, maybe they wouldn't have to protest and be on those individual streets protesting for inequality and injustice.
You know, last year there were 194 homicides in the city of St. Louis. How many of those were officer-involved shootings, Senator?
What's your point?
Well, I would say it's a very tiny number. I don't know how many it is. One, two, three, I don't know what it is. But 194, let's say it's four. 190 were not officer-involved shootings. And you seem to be very concerned about the four, and you're convicting these law enforcement officers before they're proven guilty in a court of law. And yet you don't seem to care at all about the other 190 homicides. I think that's
you
a problem, Senator.
You say I don't
Senator.
Seem to care?
Huh?
Every time I'm fighting for education, I care.
I'm completely with you on the need to give people
every time,
more.
Every time I talk about the quality education versus the lack of quality education, I'm fighting against criminal justice. I mean, I'm fighting for a criminal justice reform.
And that's good. And when
okay.
we can work
I'm
on that
I'm fighting to reduce the
that.
Murders. Every time I talk about young men and women needing a livable wage. Okay, not just a minimum wage, but a livable wage. I'm fighting against what you're talking about.
Okay,
every time I stand on this floor and talk about how individuals are being locked up because they can't pay their child support or cannot find a job because they have a felony charge, those policies that you all put in place to keep a people down. Every time I bring that up and every time I pass a sponsor legislation to deal with those issues, I'm fighting reducing crime in the community.
Well, this legislature has passed 2 years in a row, former Senator Curl's expungement bills. We've done a number of things to allow people who have convictions to regain licenses.
Yeah, I've been fighting for that for 7 years.
Senator, in the last year, has the minimum wage gone up or gone down? Gone up, right, in the last year?
It's still not livable.
But what have homicides done? But it's gone in the right direction, according to your analysis.
But it's still not livable.
You believe the minimum wage should be higher. And what have homicides in the city of St. Louis done in the last year?
What do you mean?
So year-to-date homicides, as of July 31st in 2019, there were 114 homicides.
Okay.
This year there were 153. That's almost, 40-50% increase.
Okay. So,
I don't think minimum wage seems to be the answer.
No, the answer is that's not enough. But let me say this here. Let me say this to you. I'm honestly asking you this question. I really want to know this from you, Senator, because you and I, you know, we have a relationship. Why do you think the homicide rates are going up? And don't try to be facetious, say, oh, it's Kim. No, I'm talking straight up. Because why do you truly believe the homicide rate is going up in the city of St. Louis? And not just the city of St. Louis, but the homicide rate is going up in so many other urban corridors throughout the country.
Well, let me.
So it seems like it's a systematic problem. That's happening in so many other urban corridors, but why do you think it's happening in St. Louis?
Well, St. Louis is one of the worst in the country, but Senator, you've been involved in these law enforcement, public safety issues before. You really pushed hard for local control of the St. Louis City Police Department. Do you believe that is part of the problem? How is that working for us here?
Local control?
Yeah, since local control came about, what has the homicide done, Senator?
I think the homicide has gone up.
It has dramatically, Senator.
But I don't think that's a direct correlation to local control.
Okay, I'm just asking.
So local control and the homicide rate.
Three senators standing. Senator from Butler County, for what reason do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Please send my substitute back. I have a new Senate substitute.
Madam Secretary, please send the substitute back. Senator from Butler, please send your new substitute forward.
Thank you, Mr. President. I ask for waiver of the reading. I will not close until it has been totally distributed.
Hearing no objection, a waiver of the reading shall be granted. You will not close until it's distributed. Senator, would you care to move for its adoption and then feel free to explain it?
Thank you, Mr. President. I do move the Senate substitute number 2 for Senate Bill 1 to be adopted. This substitute adds a 3-year sunset to the St. Louis residency requirements. It removes the distribution of drugs and the manufacturing of a controlled substance from the mandatory juvenile certification hearing requirement and adds armed criminal action and weapons offenses. We increase the age for the juvenile certification hearings for juveniles between the ages of 14 and 18 instead of the original 12 to 18 years of age, and added some metrics to the certification hearing to include reporting demographics, race, and offenses. With that, Mr. President, I'd be glad to take any questions.
The senator from Butler County has moved the adoption of Senate Substitute Number 2 to Senate Bill Number 1. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 4th.
Can I inquire of the senator from Butler?
Senator from Butler, do you yield?
I do. Thank you.
Does proceed.
Senator, it has been a long, I'm still in the morning right now because, you know, I haven't had breakfast. So it has been a long day. It's been a fasting day for me.
I think
my pastor would be very pleased. You know, he's been trying to, you know, get me into this fasting thing. You know, so basically, I just want to know, did we make any changes in reference to the metrics? Is that in there? Because they haven't distributed the substitute yet.
Okay.
So I'm just waiting on them to distribute it, so that we can make sure that, you know.
Well, we added all the metrics that we had talked about.
Yeah.
Certification hearing to include reporting demographics, race, and offenses, stuff like that we'd agreed to.
Yes.
Offline.
Yes.
And that's all been done. We also raised the age from 14 to 18.
Okay.
Like we visited on.
Okay.
It also removes the distribution of drugs and manufacturing of controlled substance.
Okay.
From the mandatory juvenile certification hearing requirement. We removed that also.
Okay. Well, I know it's been a tough negotiation, but I think that, you know, I think that we in the Senate we should show some cooperation how to negotiate. It take all of these hours. I think we all be fired by now. you know, taking all of these hours to negotiate. So I think that they're still distributing that.
Yes, ma'am.
That language. But, you know, we had a conversation, too. You know, we talked about, you know, what your programming is doing down in the Boot Hill. And we're going to try to emulate what you're doing in the city. And I'm going to come down and visit.
Yeah.
And you're going to walk me through all of that. And I'm going to tell you what we're doing.
Absolutely.
But I also want you to come visit so I can show you what I'm talking about. And maybe you can have some ideas as well. So I think that, you know, that's a good thing.
Networking is always good. Sometimes programs may not work exactly the way they would down there or up there or vice versa. But, you know, the lieutenant governor's actually been down there several times, down at some of the outreach centers that's going on down there and the after-school mentoring, things like that that's going on. So I think you would glean quite a bit of information from there. You know, there's never a better time than get started.
That's right. We can
get
started.
A big job ahead of us. These kids deserve it, though. Mm-hmm. They deserve it.
Okay.
And that's what we need to work on.
Well, thank you for the inquiry.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Further discussion on the adoption of Senate Substitute Number 2. Senator from Platte County.
Thank you, Mr. President. To inquire of the Senator from Butler.
Senator from Butler, do you yield?
I do. Thank you.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Did a good job on this. As I understand, we don't yet have copies of it distributed, and I don't think you were going to close until it gets distributed
on
the desks.
That's correct.
So I thought I would just maybe occupy the floor and make sure that I'm understanding the bill from you in terms of the changes that have been made. So one of the concerns that you and I had discussed off floor was the issue of quote-unquote, raising the age for juvenile certification. And there, I think there was some confusion, certainly on my part, whether we were talking about something more broad where we were raising certification as a baseline matter. In other words, you can no longer certify a juvenile who's 12 or 13 and raising that age to 14.
Right.
That's, in fact, not what the negotiated bill is doing. It is, simply saying that for purposes of having a mandatory certification hearing,
that's right,
you are raising the age from 12 to 14.
That's correct.
So a judge still has the discretion, although they're not mandated to have the hearing, to certify a 13-year-old, 12-year-old, depending on how serious the offense
right.
is.
Okay. Yeah, we haven't changed any of that.
Right. And then in terms of the police residency provision, we are extending it with a 3-year sunset as opposed to being a permanent repeal of residency, which was the floor substitute version of your bill that came out earlier this morning.
That's correct. Okay.
Yep. And then the last two things, as I understand it, are that we're taking out two drug offenses that are in the current mandatory certification hearing statute, removing those because they're nonviolent in nature, and replacing them with armed criminal action and with
more serious offenses. That's
more
correct.
Serious offenses That's involving correct. Weapons.
Correct.
Right. I just want to flip really quick.
That's okay. Go ahead. We're good.
We have
fresh off the press.
Fresh off the press. It's still hot.
It's still hot.
Okay. So it looks like the Now, Senator, I'm a little confused by what we've got in here. So if I'm looking at this correctly, so we've got the change that starts on page 7.
What page are you on, 7?
Page 7, line 3.
Okay.
So it says, if a petition alleges that a child between the ages of what used to be 12, that's been bracketed out, 14 and 18 has committed an offense which would be considered a felony if committed by an adult, the court may, upon its own motion or upon the motion of the juvenile officer, order a hearing to determine whether or not to I'm not using the exact language of the statute, but certify them.
Right.
And then it says later on, except if the petition alleges that any child has committed an offense, which would be first-degree murder, and it lists a series of offenses. Then it says that under those circumstances, the court must have a hearing. So the concern, actually, as the bill was described, I'm not reading it the way that it was described, which is this appears to be saying that we are raising the age of when you can certify a juvenile in all instances as a baseline matter, as opposed to what had been represented earlier, which is raising the age only with respect to the mandatory hearings. So, am I reading this incorrectly?
Yes.
My chief is checking on that right now.
Well, while your chief is checking on the language, I may terminate this inquiry, and I think the senator from the fourth may have some insights onto this language. So, Senator, thank you for the inquiry. I appreciate it, Mr. President.
Senator from Platt?
Yes, to inquire of the Senator from the 4th.
Senator from the 4th, do you yield?
Yes.
She does. Proceed.
Senator, how are we doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing great.
Okay, so if you start in Section 211, Line 3.071, it does the age. Hold on. It says, if the petition alleges that the child between blah, 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 or it's committed as an offense, which would be considered a felony, blah, blah, blah. If you get down to Line 10, except that if the petition alleges that the child, see, it's the except, that applies to the except rule.
Right, but the first provision, so the way the statute works is you've basically got two different distinct components. Number one, whether or not the court on its own motion can certify a juvenile. That's the first provision, starting on Line 3, and leading up to the semicolon that ends on Line 10.
But it's only talking about hearing.
No. It's saying that if the petition alleges that a child, now we're moving it from 12 to 14, has committed an offense which would be considered a felony if committed by an adult, the court may, upon its own motion, order that the juvenile be certified. I'm paraphrasing now.
Order
the latter
a hearing.
Half. But, Senator, you can't certify without having hearings. So what this is, unless I am reading this incorrectly, what this is purporting to do is to change when you can certify as a base level matter. It's now saying you cannot certify an adult. You cannot have a discretionary hearing for purposes of certification. You cannot have a mandatory hearing for purposes of certification. You can no longer certify unless the age is 14 or up.
It says the court may, upon his motion or motion, bear the juvenile off the child or the child's custodian, order a hearing, and may, in his discretion, dismiss the petition of such child, may be transferred to the court of general jurisdiction.
And that means certification. That's what we're talking about.
Yes.
When we're talking about a court of general jurisdiction, we're talking about removing the child from juvenile court, and we're moving them to the circuit court, the court of general jurisdiction. That is, they are being certified as an adult. So what this is saying now, what we are doing in this statute is we're saying if a current law, 13-year-old commits murder in the first degree, a 13-year-old currently can be certified as an adult, meaning that they can receive the full range of punishment that's available to an adult. What we're doing with the rewrite of this statute right now as I'm reading it is we are moving that age to 14. So now if you have a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old who commits a first-degree murder, the only thing that can happen is they can be tried as a juvenile. And juvenile courts lose jurisdiction at age 21. Normally 18, the court at its discretion can extend it to 21. So that means somebody who commits a homicide is required to be released from prison if they commit a homicide when they're 13, when they are 21 years old. Now, I will say something about this provision. I have deep concerns about this for several reasons. One, just policy considerations. Two, this has never been heard before. And the reason I know it's never been heard before is because this provision would have come through the Judiciary Committee, which I chair and which you serve on. This is also not within the scope of the governor's call to raise the age for certification as a baseline matter. So the governor, so this is beyond the call of the scope of the session.
Well, I don't believe it's beyond the call of the scope of the session. And secondly, you're talking about, it's my understanding that the courts can order a certification hearing of any juvenile.
If they are 12 or older, but what we are purporting to do in this statute, which was misrepresented, by the way, to me on the floor and in negotiations off the floor.
Well, negotiations I'm not saying he's not right. Everybody has an interpretation of what is in this language. So the interpretation in this language was, we negotiated this language for 2.5 hours. Prior to you getting involved in those negotiations.
Well, great. I'm involved in the negotiations now that we're on the floor.
Yes. And we have a difference of opinion in reference to whether this is in the call, because the call is dealing with the certification of juveniles.
No. What the governor's proclamation actually says is it has to do with adding certain offenses to the mandatory hearing requirement that are not currently in the statute. The call is actually drawn very narrowly to prevent us from doing other things relating to certification, and I would not only argue, I would say it's beyond a shadow of a doubt that the governor's current call does not include, and I will be making a point of order on this in a minute, unless the floor substitute is brought back, that this is beyond the scope of the governor's call, because there is nothing in there about raising the age for minor certification.
Well,
and I'm a little bit, and the thing that's really disappointing, and this is strangely reminiscent of something that happened in the session last year, where there were things represented to this body about things not being in a bill, and then all of a sudden you dig into the bill, and the bill is very different than this one been represented on the floor and during negotiations.
Well, that was my understanding, that this is saying that it only pertains to the offenses that are in the exception rule. That was my understanding.
Well, it would seem to me that the change for age 14 needs to be added in after the semicolon halfway down the page, not at the very beginning of the page.
Okay, Senator. I mean, if, I don't know. You're saying add the exception where? Because I don't see where that would be in the bill. So you're saying that after line 10?
After line 10, after the semicolon.
After the semicolon. Okay, well.
So
you're inquiring on
I think the senator from Newton might want to inquire of you. I'm going to go off the floor for a second and have some conversations.
Further discussion on the adoption of the sub, Senator from Newton County. Senator from Newton.
To inquire of the Senator from the 4th, please.
Senator from the 4th, you yield to an inquiry.
Yes.
She does proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay.
I concur with the reading. I understand what your goal is to have it be that people cannot have the mandatory certification hearing would only apply to those that are over 14 years of age. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
Okay. The way it is written, in my legal opinion also, is this changes the you cannot certify under 14 the way it's written. Right before the semicolon you talked about in line 10, right after, that would need to have an insert there that would say something to the effect of, juveniles over the 14 and over. Well, and then it would have the mandatory hearing.
Well,
the way it is now with that, taking 12 to 14 at that on line 4 does change that you can never certify a 12 or a 13-year-old, is rarely done.
Well, anyway, let me tell you something. I don't like the whole statute at all. I don't like even adding these two things that you're trying to add. I don't even like certifying juveniles as adults in the first place.
The issue, certification of juveniles does not happen very often.
Well,
I mean, you're dealing. I did juvenile law for quite a few years. You don't.
Well, so I'm told. But
with her heinous, I mean, if you have a 13-year-old that walks into a, and this is pure hypothetical, walks into a house and kills a whole family, a mother, a father, three kids, the way this is written right here, when that kid's 21, he walks out the door. Now, you can try to go for mental infirmity or something like that.
But you got to find out. See, the thing is, see, then you're going to have to get into the underlying causes of who failed that 13-year-old and why that 13-year-old has a gun. Hold on. That's what I'm talking about. Why that 13-year-old has a gun. You relax.
No. This is looking at the people. The mother, the father, the three kids who were killed, and this is punishment for
I understand
for
that,
the...
but that blood ain't only on that 13-year-old's hands. It's on some of these people in here who make these legislative laws' hands. Some of that blood is on their hands. Some of that blood is on the people
who misallocate
resources.
I don't disagree with your resource allocation issues, but that is not what this statute does. There's nothing in the statute that does resource allocation. This is strictly a criminal statute, and we're dealing only with the criminal interaction with the person who, committed the crime.
I mean, listen to me.
If you want to put more money for education, I mean, we support those.
You want to have tough on crime measures for children, but you don't want to deal with this legislature. Don't want to deal with the poverty and the lack of resources for those.
Okay, You have just misquoted what I have said.
I ain't misquote what you said.
Well,
I'm just stating what I'm saying. I ain't trying to requote what you said.
I haven't said we don't care about poverty and education. That's not what this is about.
I said that the legislature want to deal with tough on crime issues. Hold on. And you want to weaken the gun laws. And then you want to come back and punish these kids who got the guns. Hold on. Not offering any trauma-infused behavior help. Hold on. We had a pilot program put together with funding to help these kids who are dealing with the trauma of all of this stuff, gun violence and everything else, who can't function. That was vetoed. Line item vetoed out of the budget.
We don't line item veto. Well, the budget, yeah.
Yeah, listen. So now we want to say we want to punish these kids after they does something when you've already put the gun in their hand.
We want to protect citizens. There are five dead people in my example.
You protect them if you deal with the underlying causes of crime.
I actually put in quite a few mental health bills, if you'll notice. Therefore, I personally and a lot of legislators in this floor of both parties deal with education, deal with mental health, deal with poverty. This is not what this bill is about. We are talking about the punishment of a person who has killed
It is
people.
About that. We don't have to get to the killing. They won't get to the killing. If they provided the resources and stuff before they get to that point. You want to deal with them when they at that point, but you don't want to deal with them get there.
Okay, right there, again, my inquiry, I did not ever say I didn't want to deal with them. I have had bills that deal with them. Many legislators on this floor, both Republican and Democrat, have had bills that deal with education, deal with poverty, deal with problem children. Yes, we have that have issues. We have dealt with that. Yes, we do deal with that in other bills, not this bill. This bill is looking at one item of the big picture. And you're saying that because we do this bill, you're saying because we do this bill, we're not doing the other things. That's not true.
We're not. Tell me what we're dealing with the other things that we're not. We're not. I mean,
I'm dealing with the other things in other bills.
I've been here 11 years.
So have I.
Republicans have been in control for the time that I've been here.
We have mental health bills all the time. We have juvenile bills. We have some great juvenile bills we just passed. We had bills dealing with homeless. Some of these kids are homeless. You know, part of my 836, whatever, is in the bill we passed dealing with homeless youth, which some of these kids may be homeless youth. To say that the legislature does not deal with it at all, we just want to deal with punishment is erroneous.
That is not erroneous.
We
have only seen punishment.
We have lots of bills.
I've only seen favorable things for corporations. I have not seen funding.
Well, I would suggest
you.
I would be happy to send you a copy of my bill and the bill the governor signed on homeless youth.
Mm-hmm.
So there are bills that we have dealt with youth. Yes, absolutely. Dealt with mental health issues with children. Yes. Global
I don't
poverty,
believe that
yes.
juveniles should be certified as adults.
This bill
We're not
going
to get past that.
This bill deals with an issue of certification of
I
a criminal.
I understand that.
And again, if
I
we're not looking
that.
At the victim, if we don't care
we
that
be
we have dead people.
The adults who caused them and put the guns in their
these
hands.
Can be mothers, fathers. These can be other kids. These can be children. And you're saying, well, because this children didn't respond well to his livelihood, we can, this other kid is okay, well, that he died, so what? No, that kid that is deceased has, you know, we have the right, the responsibility to ensure that there aren't more kids that end up dead by the same individual. So we have a certification hearing. He may not be certified.
We need to have the responsibility of providing programming and after-school programming and other things.
And we do that.
Kids.
We have up. You know how much money we put in early childhood.
Anything. This legislator voted against raising the minimum wage. Families are struggling to pay and take care of these homes and these families. If you look at the Missouri Poverty Report, the average household of four or five is below the Missouri poverty line. So don't tell me about this legislature handling
things. I can most certainly tell you. How much money do we put in
causes of crime?
How much money do we put into early childhood education? How much?
You wouldn't even pass health care.
We have done.
So that these children can have health care.
Just passed.
Half of them don't have any health care.
Children are already covered by Medicaid that are uninsured.
Jobs that don't provide health care. That's
who provide health care.
They don't get behavior health. Treatment. They're not getting health care treatment.
They most certainly
do. All of that is part of it. All of that is part of it. So no.
Yes, we do.
Juveniles should not be certified as adults. Period.
We have these programs, yes. The ones you say we don't have, we fund. We fund hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars in this area that you say we don't have.
Where is that? Where does it go?
This statute in front of us is dealing with a person who has committed a crime of extreme proportions, such as murder. When people are dead, when kids are dead, when parents are dead, they don't have other things. That is what this is dealing with. I don't think anyone in this room is going to stand up and argue and say,
we're
not going to put money in to these other things. We do in other bills.
Let me tell you what this does. And let me tell you what it does. We're ignoring the facts that six times any others, African-American youth are disproportionately tried as adults than any other demographic. That's a fact. The fact is that they make up more than 85% of the judicial system. That's a fact. So all of these tough on crime laws that you're putting together are disproportionately applied demographically in this state and in this country.
I do not see anywhere written in here that we are intending to disproportionate. If there is a societal issue, I am not arguing that we may have a societal issue on disproportionate. That is not what this statute is talking about. We're talking about individual cases.
Well,
you have an individual human being who has killed other individual human beings in the worst example.
There is no substantial proof that these individuals should be tried as adults. I mean, that juveniles should be tried as adults. I just don't agree with that. I don't agree with juveniles being tried as adults.
And that's a perfectly fine stance. You can agree to that.
Their brains is not or not.
Juveniles are rarely certified except for very heinous crimes.
Who influenced that 13-year-old? Where were you when
that is a different bill than what we have before us on the floor that we do fund? Yes,
it doesn't matter. You can't.
But does it matter that we fund it?
Yes, it does.
It doesn't matter that we have that we've increased early childhood education, that we've increased after programs, funding for after school programs. Does it matter that we've done grants for different organizations that are available? My area, we have our after youth programs are done by YMCA. They're done by Boys and Girls Clubs. Those things are out there. They get grants from us. To say that we in no way ever fund them is erroneous. It is not correct. We do fund. This bill does not deal with that, is what I'm saying. I think the majority of people in this chamber do deal with it. They do what they think in their level of funding is that we can afford, they do. We can't afford to fund everything as much as we'd all like. I have things that I would love to fund 100%. You have things you'd love to 100% fund. We all can't fund everything at 100%. We fund what we can fund, and we argue back and forth. You fight to try to get more money for early childhood, more money for after-school programs. I respect you for fighting for that. I fight for more. I do kid work too, but I look at seniors a lot. That's one of the groups that I'm very sensitive about. We fight for that, but that is not what this bill covers. It is not. This is dealing with an individual who is a minor, who is over the age of, if they're under the age of 12, if they're 9 years old, they don't get certified. If they're 10 years old, they don't get certified. If they're 11 years old, they don't get certified.
Like I told you before,
they don't even get a hearing.
We can continue to argue this point, but I believe that juveniles should not be certified as adults, period.
Well, and that
I'm not going to get off that.
I respect that.
So no matter how egregious you think the crime is, I think that it's a crime that society has failed a 13-year-old who finds himself with an AK-47.
I think it's a crime that the people who are dead or the kids that are dead have been failed by society by not keeping a dangerous individual off the street, no matter what the age.
I agree. But if you want to stop that process, we have to deal with the poverty that's associated with the state of Missouri.
And I agree with you.
And the joblessness that is associated and the hopelessness of those kids that is associated. And not only do we have that problem, we have a whole lot of youth that are substance abusing. Those are the issues. We have
three senators standing. Senator from Boone County, for what reason do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the Senate stand in recess until 8:15 p.m. this day.
The Senate shall stand in recess. Per the motion of the Senator Boone, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate shall stand in recess until 8:15 this day.